You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
If you don't recognize this, you'll hear it tonight. It is the new Amazon Thursday Night Football theme. And what a game they have to open it up. Chargers at Chiefs. Chiefs are favored by 4. I think it's going to come down to the wire. I'm really looking forward to it. Two of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, Patrick Mahomes, going head-to-head with Justin Herbert. So, Anthony, I've got like 7 names running around in my head. Andy, I was thumbing through the Big Lead, which is a good website that has a lot of goofy sports stories on it. And they wrote this about Monday night's game. Monday Night Football was the debut of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. And here's what he said. It's great. Buck and Aikman being on the call give the game a certain gravitas that only announcers who presided over loads of big NFL games can bring to the table. This is no shot at Steve Levy, Louis Riddick, Brian Greasy, or anybody else. It isn't their fault they haven't commented on dozens of marquee football games over the last decade plus. But the Monday night broadcast just feels different with Buck and Aikman on the call. How much you agree is largely dependent on your opinion of Buck, admittedly. Some hate the sound of his voice with the passion of 1,000 suns. Yet even haters must acknowledge that the voice connected to some of the biggest moments in recent football history, which is why some people like him and some people hate him. It made me think of this question. When you're watching a game, do you care? Or is it important to you who the announcers are? Or are you watching the game and the announcers just come along with the ride?
I don't particularly care. I'll rephrase. I'm not going to not watch a game because I don't like the announcers. The announcers are not going to keep me from watching something. You know, generally speaking, I don't get too picky about who the announcers are to begin with, unless I just hate the sound of their voice or I think they're just stupendously boring. I'm going to watch no matter who it is. I do think, though, that sometimes play-by-play guys, announcers, can elevate a game.
Yeah, I agree with you. And tonight you're going to get Al Michaels and Kirk Herbstreit. I saw them do a preseason game, and they were great. Bergman, do you care who the announcers are when you watch a game?
There's only one announcer that I care about watching, and I will seek out his games. Gus Johnson, who
really?
Is just fantastic. Every game he calls is an exciting game. Whether it's just got lucky or how he goes about it, I love Gus Johnson.
Yeah, you love his enthusiasm.
Yep.
Jorge, how about you? Do you care who the announcers are?
No, because sometimes I watch it at a bar. There's no announcers, you know? So
right.
It doesn't matter to me.
To me, if you can get guys like Buck and Aikman and Michaels and Herbstreit and get guys like that, you're right, Andy. They elevate a game. Like tonight, I'm glad Al Michaels is doing this game. It's a really big game. And I think that's why you saw the spending wars happen this year with announcers that Monday Night Football upgraded. Amazon went out and got heavy hitters. I thought the guys Fox moved up the chain, like Kevin Burkhardt to do football, Joe Davis to do baseball, are both great. I think that what you want, if you're a sports fan, watching or listening to a game, is you want someone that is prepared, that does their homework, and doesn't detract from what you're watching. As long as you give me that, I'll listen to anybody.
Okay, here's a perfect example of how an announcer can elevate a game, elevate a product. Ralph Lawler, for those decades with just an awful Clipper product, made them watchable because he was so good and he was so enthusiastic. Like guys like Vin and Chick and Bob Miller, like Pete Arbogast, like they're obviously great at what they do, but they had the luxury of consistently great teams, competitive teams, championship runs.
Yeah, Ralph was the opposite.
Ralph had garbage to work with for a while. I mean, he had these uncompetitive teams run by an owner who did not care at all. The Clippers were a true laughingstock. And Ralph Lawler went out there and made these games against, I don't know, all impossibilities entertaining. Like, and that speaks to what an announcer can do.
I am fascinated, though, by how the same announcer can elicit opposite reactions. Like, I'll give you an example. I love Bill Walton calling a basketball game. I have friends that will turn it off if Bill is calling the game because they don't like all the tangents that he goes on. I'm exactly the opposite. If one team is ahead by 30, but it's Walton and Dave Pasch calling the game, I'm in. Because I want to hear Walton go off on, you know, on all these, like,
yeah,
legendary road stories and all this other stuff. But it's not for everybody.
Well, I mean, I find him entertaining. I've met him a few times. Actually, I had dinner at his house several years ago. He's super entertaining to me, but he's got a very specific voice, you know, like that nasal pitch. Some people aren't going to like it. And like you said, the tangents. And in the big lead story you mentioned, Joe Buck, I think Joe Buck is great. I'm biased a bit because I grew up in St. Louis. Grew up in St. Louis. I actually went to the same high school as him, albeit he was several years ahead of me. I didn't really know him.
Right.
But I think a lot of people don't like Joe Buck because they think he's a product of nepotism. And he would be the first person to tell you, yes, of course, my dad being Jack Buck opened a ton of doors for me. However, he's clearly proven himself as an announcer.
I think everything you just said is 100% accurate, and I'm baffled by it. Like, Bergman, that's an act, right, that you say you don't like Joe Buck, right?
No, it's not Joe Buck. I like Joe Buck. I don't like, who's the, John Smoltz. I think John Smoltz absolutely hates the Dodgers. I fully believe it. I'll never not believe it.
No,
John Smoltz does. Joe Buck doesn't hate anybody.
Joe Buck,
Smoltz does for sure.
Okay. Joe Buck is fantastic.
He's great.
And this thing, you're right when you say people assign a level of nepotism to him. If you go down the rabbit hole with this, Joe Buck wrote a book a couple of years ago called Lucky Bastard.
Mm-hmm.
Joe Buck's father is Jack Buck, but his mom is not Jack Buck's original wife. He was somebody that came along, and he had a tough childhood. Jack Buck's family was not very nice to him. And if you were on another planet and came down here and listened to Joe Buck call a game, there's no logical conclusion you can come to other than that guy's really good.
No, he is. It's interesting, actually. There was an article that I saw today. Maya, her name, I believe, is Maya Hawk. She's Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's kid.
Okay.
And she's on Stranger Things. She's been getting a lot of work.
She's
lately.
An actress.
She's an actress. Okay. And she admitted, like, I am a product of nepotism. Like, I've had opportunities put in front of me that other people might not have because of who my parents are. That being said, though, I have also had an obligation to make good on those opportunities because they're not going to come forever. At some point, people are going to stop caring that I'm Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman's kid. If I don't deliver, if I don't work hard, if I don't make the most of these opportunities, they're going to dry up. If Joe Buck was talentless as an announcer, by now, he'd be out of sports. Like, if anything, he does more games now and more sports, not fewer. I think also, too, with Joe Buck, remember, it's probably like 15, 20 years ago, Randy Moss had that celebration where he mooned the Lambeau Field.
And Joe Buck called him out for it.
Right, like he mimed, really, mooning the Lambeau Field. And Joe Buck called it disgusting in the moment. I think for a lot of people, that was a flashpoint where they didn't like Joe Buck, where they saw him as just going off on a young player like Randy Moss. And for some of them, he just became like the stodgy white guy privileged for them.
He's not. He makes fun of himself all the time. He's like,
he is by all accounts
working,
a good guy.
I mean, it's just, I don't get the Joe Buck hate. Never have. But, you know, to the point you made about nepotism. Have you seen this Nicolas Cage movie came out last year called The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent?
Great.
Okay. The girl that plays his daughter in that movie is great. And I was stunned when I went on IMDb and I looked it up. Her name is Lily Mo Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Her parents are Michael Sheen and Kate Beckinsale.
Yep.
And I just thought she was really good. And you know me, I'm obsessed with Kate Beckinsale. I had no idea this girl was that good. You know, so that's, you see her and you go, well, she probably got breaks because her parents are actors.
Of course she did.
But if you watch this movie and you come out of it, you go, wow. Like, she has that club in her bag. Like, she's that good. And you can tell she's going to have a really long career if she wants to, and she's going to be really great at it.
The best.
Just because somebody is a byproduct, just because Joe Buck is Jack Buck's son, doesn't mean the only reason he got the job is nepotism.
Yeah.
Like, to your point, you've got to continue to prove it.
The only reason he got opportunities as early as he did is clearly from being Joe Buck's kid. I mean, right. You don't get the opportunities he got out of the gate without Jack Buck being your dad. And I think Joe Buck would be the first person to concede this. But again, he's put in a lot of work and to become as good as he is. I remember years ago, Jeff Bridges, you know, whose father was Lloyd Bridges, a very successful actor.
Beau Bridges is his brother.
Yeah. Jeff Bridges is an incredibly talented actor who's a good-looking guy on top of it. Like, he's somebody that maybe could have found breaks anyway. He's the first person to admit, yeah, my dad being famous from Sea Hunt and all this other stuff, that got me in the door. Like, obviously, nepotism helped me. Like, the people who are confident in what they can do, they're the ones that don't protest it.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah, probably. I'm glad tonight we get Al Michaels. I'm glad Joe Buck and Troy Aikman are on. I think you used the right phrase in this whole discussion. They elevate the game. All right, Jorge, follow me here. I wanted to get to this because I thought it was something that everybody was talking about at the Emmys. Quinta Brunson is the girl that won the award for writing for a comedy. And everybody accused Jimmy Kimmel of ruining her moment. Jimmy Kimmel and Will Arnett did a bit where Jimmy Kimmel was passed out on stage and he was just lying on the stage.
He's pretending to be drunk.
Pretending to be drunk when Quinta Brunson got up to give her speech. And a lot of people, especially people that were from her show, thought he upstaged her moment. So last night, Kimmel invited Quinta Brunson onto his show to kind of apologize and make good, and here's how it went.
Now, that was a dumb comedy bit that we thought it would be funny. I lost, and then I drank too much, and I had to be dragged out on the stage. Mm-hmm. And then people got upset. Mm-hmm. They said I stole your moment, mm-hmm. and maybe I did, and I'm very sorry if I did do that. I'm sorry I did do that, actually. And also, the last thing I would ever want to do is upset you because I think so much of you, and I think you know that. I hope you know that.
I do. Well, Jimmy, let me just say thank you. It is very kind of you to say that. I honestly was in such a moment of just having a good time. Like, I won my first Emmy. I was up there, happy. Right. And I was wrapped up in the moment and just having a good time. I don't know. I didn't see any of that. I saw you and I saw Will Arnett and my Emmy, and I was just like, oh my God, I'm having so much fun. But thank you. That's kind. But honestly, I had a good night.
So the beef has been squashed, but I didn't think that it didn't bother me, that bit. I don't think the bit really worked, but I don't think he took away from her moment. Did you?
Well, I think he did take away from her moment. I just don't think he did it intentionally. Like, I've done improv training. I've done improv shows. I've worked with comics. And, like, the thing that's always drilled into your head is you commit to the bit. Like, once you're in it, you commit, you go all the way.
Well, he did.
Right. Well, yeah. I think in his mind, this was him just committing to the bit, taking it to the next level. And what he didn't recognize in the moment was his bit was over. Like, the scene was over. The context changed. So at that point, the bit truly doesn't work anymore. Like, he actually, I think if he had been in the audience, he would have recognized, like, oh God, that guy pretending to be drunk on the stage, he needs to get up because this is no longer about him anymore. So I just think comics are needy people. Like, they want applause all
I
the
thought,
time. They
I thought
want attention
last
all the time.
Night, he handled that great and she handled that great, and it sounds like
they have a history. Like, they're friends. Like, he's been supportive of her over the years.
Yeah, it sounds like the beef is over. All right, coming up next, Anita Marks, our gambling expert, will join us. I know what you're saying. Ireland, when are you going to lay down a parlay so I can make some money? It's happening, and it's happening next.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, Mason in Ireland, Andy Kamenetsky in for Mason. We got a great game tonight, Thursday night football. Chargers at Chiefs. And joining us right now is our gambling expert, Anita Marks. Anita hosts a new show that airs every Thursday night here on ESPN LA. And last week, she was all over it. Anita, I have great respect for you because in your very first appearance in LA, you came out and said, I'm sorry, the Bills are winning that game. And we all called you an idiot and said that you're no fun and blah, blah, blah. And I'm now bowing to you because you were 100% right. The Bills were the pick last week. Go ahead, take your bow, take your moment in the sun.
No, hey, listen, I got a bottle of wine.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah, that's all that matters.
Okay. Now, let's talk about tonight. I love this game. I think it's going to be super entertaining for fans. Mm-hmm. Charger-Chiefs games last year were great. The Chargers won the first game by 6. The Chiefs came back and won the second game in overtime. Chargers are 4-point underdogs. In your opinion, what's the right side of the game tonight?
Yeah, listen, give me the Chargers. I'll take the points.
Really?
And oh, yeah. And here's another thing. I'm going to play the Chargers on the money line as well. Which
explain what that means,
Whoa.
Anita, to people who don't know. When you say, okay, I'm taking them on the money line, what does that mean?
Sure. Okay, so right now right now the game starts and the Chargers are already up by 4, okay?
Right.
So now the Chargers can lose by 3 and you still win. But what's happening is that you're having to put $110 down to win $100, okay?
Got it.
So you know what? Yeah, okay. This very well could be a close game. I'm going to take the Chargers and give me the points, but I'm also going to throw some money on the money line, which means keep your stinking points. I don't need your points. I'm going to play the Chargers straight up to win. And what I'm doing is I'm laying $100 down to win $160.
There okay. you go.
So you're hedging.
Just, yeah, you're swinging the odds in your favor. That, you know, smart.
So a few things. So number one, I do believe the Chargers win, but you know what? Give me the 4 points just in case it's a close game because it is Patrick Mahomes. It is the Kansas City Chiefs. So, I'm going to play it both ways.
Okay, Anita, why? What makes you think that this is the right bet with the Chargers?
Well, a few things here. I think the line is a knee-jerk reaction to what we saw the Chiefs do against the Cardinals last week. But to me, if you guys watched that game, anemic. Like, there is something way wrong with that Arizona Cardinals team, especially that defense. So I think that it's an overreaction to that. I also think it's an overreaction the fact that Keenan Allen is not going to be active and attractive tonight. But listen, we're talking about Justin Herbert, arguably some feel the best quarterback in the NFL in the next decade, atop of a plethora of weapons. My best bet tonight is Palmer over receiving yards, by the way. Don't sleep on the other slew of weapons that, of course, Herbert has to work with. And keep in mind, this is a Chargers defense, much different animal than what Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs faced against the Cardinals last week. I mean, this is a Chargers defense. They held the Raiders to 19 points. And nobody's talking enough about the fact that the Kansas City Chiefs are going to be without their field goal kicker, Butker. Now, again, this very well, we know how good these offenses are. This very well can come down to a last-minute field goal. And now you're telling me that Kansas City doesn't have a field goal kicker who, by the way, is over 80% in his career in regard to field goals. So I think that's going to be a big key, and I don't think enough people are talking about that.
Anita Marks is with us, helping us talk gaming. Anita, I pride myself in making a lot of parlays. I call myself the parlay king, which
Good.
Is a joke because I rarely win them.
Oh,
but I have
no.
one. I have one tonight, and I either want you to say you're on the right track or talk me off it. Okay,
go
here
ahead.
Here it is. It's a four way parlay. So I got to hit them all, and I get 11.
Let me get my pen.
11-1 odds. Okay, so here's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Patrick Mahomes over 250 yards passing. You like it? Over.
I don't.
You don't. Oh. You think they're going to hold under 250?
You know what I would rather play there? I would rather play Patrick Mahomes over, I think it's 14.5 or 15.5 rushing yards.
Okay.
So I think the Chargers are going to entice Patrick Mahomes and Allaire to run the football tonight.
Okay. And then how about the second one was going to be, so I may switch that first one out. The second one's going to be Justin Herbert over 250. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that. We know it's Herbert. We know what's going on. And, you know, again, because of no Keenan Allen, Eckler is going to be a big part of that passing attack. I do like Eckler over receiving yards, over receptions as well. So, yeah, I like that. Okay. I'd roll with that.
Travis Kelce, over 76 receiving yards.
Here's the thing. I just like Derwin James, man.
He's really good.
Yeah, he's really good. I hate this
Bergman. She hates this parlay.
Well, you're terrible at parlays, so I don't.
That scares me a little bit. And also, Juju. This is a much different. Listen, this is a much different Kansas City offense. There's no Tyreek Hill. You know, going long, stretching the field, opening up things for Kelce, and the rapport that we've seen in week one with Juju Smith-Schuster and Patrick Mahomes was really, really refreshing.
All right, you may have talked me out of these things. I may go to that.
I'm so sorry.
Eckler bet is good. Last one was going to be Jerick McKinnon more than 20 yards rushing.
Okay.
You don't love it. You don't hate it. I'm making progress.
Here are the four that I would go with. And here are my four favorite prop bets.
Okay, good.
Eckler over 4.5 receptions.
Okay.
Palmer, and this is my best bet, over 46.5 receiving yards. Let's keep in mind, last season when Allen went out, the dude did extremely well. And following that was week 14, right? Like he got like, I want to say what, six or seven targets, five receptions, scored a touchdown. And then after that performance, his target share went up and was a bigger part of the offense.
All right. So how many yards do I need Palmer to get in order to win
46 and a half.
Okay. That's not bad.
Okay. It's not bad. And,
what are the other two?
Big Mike's going to get all the attention, right?
Mike Williams,
I love Bosa getting a sack tonight. You get that at plus 155.
Okay.
He sacked Patrick Mahomes in two of his last three games. He's averaging almost two sacks a game. And last but not least, I like Mecole Hardman, longest reception, 17, over 17.5 receiving yards. Mahomes went deep three times of 20-plus yards. And guess what? Two of the three were to Hardman. And they were 35 yards or longer.
Okay, I'm good. I've got them all down. Andy.
Hey, Anita, I want to ask you a question that's kind of broader right now. Mm-hmm. We're at a point in the season that it's really early. We've only seen one game from all of these teams. There's not a lot of information out there. Do you have advice for people looking to put down action right now in terms of trying to find good bets when you don't know as much as you would by, say, like week 8, week 9?
Yes, and I say this in the beginning of the season. We don't really have a true grip, a true grasp of these teams until week 3, week 4. Why? Collective bargaining agreement. Not just the first go around, but the second one as well. Very little practicing to none, right? Coaches rely a lot on those joint practices, not a lot of preseason games. So I tell people like wager modestly. You know, don't go crazy. Until, in my opinion, week 4, where we have some really good stats that we could sink our teeth into and really make solid analysis. Because a lot of what we're doing right now is we're looking back to, you know, like, for example, I love the Green Bay Packers this week against the Bears. But, you know, a lot of the stats that I'm showing are stats from 2021. Right? Like the Bears gave up the most sacks in 2021. But the Green Bay Packers allowed the most rushing yards to opposing quarterbacks in 2021. So a lot of our analysis are statistics that we're grasping from last year. And we all know teams have changed so much. So my advice is still wager, but just wager modestly, I'd say, for the first 3 weeks of the season.
Anita Marks is with us. Anita, we cover the Rams here. We're the Rams station. They did not look good against Buffalo, but now they've got Atlanta coming in. What do you like in that game? What's the right side, in your opinion?
So I do believe the Rams are going to win.
Okay.
Okay. Let me preface by saying that. But I think the Falcons getting 10.5 points is too much. Give me the Falcons with the 10.5. Listen, listen, Rams are going to win. They've had 10 days rest. They were embarrassed. McVay, great with rest advantage. There's a lot that needs to be corrected there. Like Allen Robinson, 2 targets. Are you kidding me?
Right.
I do have some concerns in regard to Stafford's elbow, even though we were told, oh, don't worry. Everything's okay. Yeah, they lost their center in Brian Allen, as you know. But this is an Atlanta Falcons team that really stepped up to the plate and competed with the Saints. And as we know, the offensive line for the Rams is a huge concern. Well, guess what? Atlanta had 4 sacks against Jameis Winston, and they did not allow a sack to the Saints, who I'm anticipating is going to destroy Tom Brady this coming week like they always do, right? That's his kryptonite.
Right.
So this Atlanta team in the trenches, they are better than the Rams. So with that being said, Mariota, very mobile. They played the pistol 28 snaps. They ran the pistol. What is this, college? And Patterson, 12 for 70 in that pistol formation. So again, Rams are going to win. I just think the Falcons, 10.5, is just too much. Give me the Falcons and the points, guys.
All right, so a couple of things I want to ask you about before we let you out of here. Okay, you mentioned that you love the Packers this week. That's a big number. They're given 10. You'd lay the 10?
I would. Listen, relax. R-E-L-A-X, as Aaron Rodgers likes to say. Also, he self-proclaimed himself the owner of the Bears. And now he's getting all kinds of crap now because of, you know, him not working with the young receiving core. And this Green Bay Packers defense is so good. Listen, I've been telling people since day one, Trey Lance is not ready to start in the NFL. I knew the Bears were going to win. I played the Bears on the money line. Weather conditions, of course, didn't play a good role either. So are the Bears that good or is Trey Lance that bad? I think it's the latter. I think Trey Lance is that bad. But it's at Lambeau Field. They're coming home. They lost week one. Aaron Rodgers is just, he's a beast in week two games after a week one loss. I think they blow it wide open. I love the Packers this week. Their defense, the Bears aren't going to know what to do with them.
All right. Last thing for me. This was a weird line move, Anita. The Bengals are at the Cowboys, and when this game opened, the Bengals were getting 2.5. The Cowboys were favored by 2.5. Now Dak's hurt, and the Bengals are favored by 7 the last time I looked. 9.5 points move off the line because Dak's not in this game. If you had to bet that game, which way would you go?
I'd take Dallas in the points. Cooper Rush has been in this offense for 5 years,
I would,
guys.
Too.
Interesting.
Yeah. 5 years.
Cooper Rush won
five
a game
years.
Against the Vikings last year. Anita, yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. He knows this offense extremely well.
By the way, this game's in Dallas.
It's in Dallas. Yep. And here's another thing, guys. Quarterback for Cincinnati. What?
Joe Burrow. Yeah.
Not only did he have an appendectomy, guys, his appendix burst.
Ugh.
It wasn't like, ooh,
yeah,
wait a minute.
Yeah, it's like at a pain.
You know, his appendix burst. And so, and I don't know if you know a lot about it, but, you know, that's dangerous stuff there. Sometimes you've got to go in there, you got to clean the organs because it's poison. So, you know, I don't think Joe Burrow's ready, man. I don't think he's 100%. I just don't. I think he's struggling here. I mean, he did not look good week one against a Pittsburgh Steelers defense. Granted, they were, especially with Watt, they were relentless. But nonetheless, getting 7, here's another thing, guys. I would wait and see. Maybe this line jumps up to 7.5 before kickoff. That's what I would do. I'm staying away from this game. Full disclosure, but if you really want to wager this game, I know there's a lot of Dallas Cowboy fans all over the country. What I would do is I would wait and see if this drums up to 7.5, then jump on it.
Anita, great stuff, and I hope you're right about the Chargers. That would make it really fun around here, and we'll be checking you out tonight. Thanks, as always, for coming on.
Thanks, Anita.
Thanks for having me, guys. Enjoy the game.
All right, there's Anita Marks. Coming up next, Bergman, UCLA football is doing something that I don't understand. Maybe you can help.
You're going to have to be more specific.
Yeah, maybe you can help explain it to me. That's next, ESPN LA.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Today, it's Andy Kamenetsky in Ireland as we roll on. And I'm a proud UCLA graduate. Our football team is 2-0, Bergman. 2-0. We haven't covered the spread yet.
In the last game they covered the spread. It was 15.5.
No, it's 15.5 this week. Remember last week?
Oh, it's 50.5. Oh, you're right.
There was 50 last week.
No, you're right. I'm getting my days mixed up.
All right, but something weird happened. I'm wondering, Andy, if you can explain, or Greg, either one of you guys can explain to me what the hubbub is here. All right? So this is from Ben Bolch at the LA Times. UCLA's official football Twitter account sent out a tweet this week calling UCLA Transfer U. It's a graphic that showed a group of Bruin transfers in uniform below a list indicating that UCLA led the country with 20 transfer starters since 2020. Atop the post was "Welcome to Transfer U." As soon as they sent this out, it sparked, according to Ben, an immediate uproar on social media and message boards. UCLA coach Chip Kelly came out yesterday, and said, "That shouldn't have gone up. That was a mistake. When I saw it, I said, that's a mistake." Now, by Wednesday afternoon, it had 500 likes and 60 comments. Yet, UCLA has deleted the tweet. He says, Kelly says, "I think what their point was," talking about his social media team, "is that we've been very efficient with our transfer portal. I think the kids we bring in here and play, that's a credit to how we do that. We've always approached it like free agency in the NFL. How can they contribute to the program?" I think what he's worried about is that when he goes out to recruit, and he tells people, "Hey, come to UCLA. You can play for me for 4 years." The kids might come back to him and say, "Well, aren't you just going to bring in a transfer and replace me after 1 year?" But this is all part of the competitive landscape.
I was going to say, I don't. There's no way you can win this particular battle if that's what you're worried
Greg,
about.
Greg, why did he make him delete the tweet?
I don't know, because he's Chip Kelly and he's a nut.
That's actually the best response. That's the best explanation.
Who cares? Yes, they got transfers. Great. They had terrible players before that,
right.
So you need something else.
Attracting. I mean, look at USC. Caleb Williams, transfer. Mario Williams, transfer. Jordan Addison, transfer.
I'll tell you right now, if you had asked me which school since 2020 has attracted the most transfers, you could have given me 100 guesses before I would have landed on UCLA.
Well, it's not attracted the most transfers. Started the most transfers.
Started. Okay, 20. Fine, whatever. Gotten enough players that were good enough to start. I'd had to go through a lot of teams before I landed on UCLA. I feel like this is you attracting starter-level talent. I don't know what you're ashamed of, embarrassed of, afraid of, running from. I don't get it.
Yeah, Greg, do you understand what the controversy is here?
No, I don't really get it. I mean, again, it's just Chip Kelly being Chip Kelly. Like, Zach Charbonnet is their best running back and has been for the last 2 years. He was a transfer from Michigan. One of their best receivers right now is Jake Bobo. He was a transfer from Duke. I'm not seeing what the problem is here.
You are always.
Jake Bobo is a great name, by the way.
It is a great name. You're always like a player away, a transfer away, a new guy away from losing your job in college football as a player. Like, that's the gig. That's the life. And maybe you end up transferring because of that.
Maybe it's that it hurts your high school recruiting if you go out and get all these transfers, but I don't see how. You're just trying to bring in the best players you can bring in. I don't get why this is a thing. Do any of you?
No, it's not a thing.
Okay. Let me ask you this, Craig.
Yeah.
Have they lost a lot of players, UCLA, like lost a lot of guys transferring elsewhere?
There's been a few. We lost, what was it? It was an inside linebacker or it was on the line over to Miami. It was a really good player. I forget what his name is right now. But yeah, they lose guys here and there. But no, it's nothing like out of control crazy. But they're also bringing in three stars for the most
part. They've had the same quarterback for 11 years.
I know, well, it was actually 15. But still, like he's got little teeny tiny hands.
You're shameless. This assault on Dorian Thompson-Robinson is ridiculous.
Small hands.
He's actually really good.
Oh, no, he's great, but he does have little teeny tiny hands.
Who cares as long as we win?
Well, if he doesn't drop the ball, you know.
He's not dropping the ball this year. Well,
it's been two games, and he barely played in the second game.
Yeah, is he playing Saturday, or is he
Yeah,
out?
I hope so. I haven't seen
him. I heard there was a chance. Yeah. There was a chance he wouldn't play.
Charbonnet didn't play either.
Yeah, I don't think this is a thing, but apparently Chip Kelly thinks it's a thing, so he had him take down the tweet.
He's small hands,
odd duck.
Yeah, Chip is not for everybody. That is for sure. The other thing I wanted to get in here before we go to Bobcat is, did you see that Cam Akers came out yesterday and said he's surprised that he didn't play more in the Ram opener? He says he's not complaining. He says he'll work hard, but he was under the same impression that a lot of Rams fans were, that it was either going to be running back by committee or he was going to be the lead back. Instead, he had three carries for 0 yards. This is real, right? I mean, Daryl Henderson has basically stolen his job.
It certainly seems like it. Unless Sean McVay was deliberately using that situation, particularly one that seemed like it was getting away from him anyway, to try to light a fire and send a message to Cam Akers, I don't blame him for being surprised. Everybody else was surprised.
Yeah, it seems odd to me, and I'll be anxious to see how they handle this on Sunday. But I thought Akers would play more.
So did I.
I thought he'd be more involved in the offense.
I thought Allen Robinson would be more involved with the offense.
Yeah, that one's just weird. Nobody knows what that
is. I hope that's just him being the new guy.
But remember, Bergman, the same thing happened with DeSean Jackson. He came in, he caught a long touchdown pass, and then they just stopped throwing it to him, and eventually he just left.
Yep, that was it for him.
Yeah,
went to the Raiders for a little bit.
Because you gave up on Robert Woods, and you haven't signed Odell Beckham because you were counting on Robinson. And then you throw him the ball two times.
Well, I mean Odell isn't ready yet. I mean,
right, but they haven't signed him.
No, but I mean, there's in some respects, there's no – signing him has nothing to do with Allen Robinson. Like, you still need somebody – to work that position until Odell Beckham Jr. is back anyway.
Yeah.
Why would you sign Odell Beckham Jr. right now?
So someone else doesn't.
Right, but I mean, he's injured. Who knows if he's even going to be ready when he says he's going to be ready? So you're going to sign a guy and then you're taking him off your roster.
Right, but if Buffalo signs him, that gives him...
Well, they're obviously not going to do it either. I mean, until it gets down to the wire. And it doesn't sound like OBJ wants to sign with anybody until he's ready either.
Yeah, well, that situation will resolve itself.
The roster.
All right, coming up next is Bobcat. We'll get Bergman in here. He'll throw a bunch of stuff at us. That's next, ESPN LA.
Thanks, Chris and Amanda. So according to Andrew Marchand of the New York Post, who I think you guys all know,
yep,
ESPN and the Pac-12 are hundreds of millions of dollars apart on a deal. With UCLA and USC set to leave, the Pac-12 doesn't really seem to have a lot to stand on. So why can't the Pac-12 just get out of their own way?
It's a great question, but they could screw up a ham sandwich. For example, I found out today that through some arcane rule, USC has to be on the Pac-12 network three times this year. They already were once for their opener. Mm-hmm. But there's two more coming up, including a game against Oregon State, which is two undefeated teams.
At 7 o'clock at night.
And we're not going to be able to watch it. Because, you know, the Pac-12 can never, ever get things right. Like, so they're going to shove this on the Pac-12 network and claim it's a victory. So no one can see your channel. It's not, I mean, I don't blame USC and UCLA for leaving. The Pac-12 is like the Keystone Cops.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a Pac-12 guy just like you and Bergman, and they're frustrating, man. They're frustrating as a conference because...
And we thought when Larry Scott left that it would get better.
Right, but there's a lot. There's a lot to unwind from Larry Scott. Like, that doesn't get fixed overnight, and it doesn't get fixed quick enough that you're going to be able to keep USC and UCLA and make them want to stay.
So I watch the Pac-12 Network. I have my ways. And
of course you do.
And they have the same commercial run over and over. It's the Bridgestone Tires commercial, and it never stopped. It's the same one.
Hey,
it's
Greg,
like four
I'd be
or five
happy,
times
I'd
in a row.
I'd be happy to watch it if that channel was available anywhere.
It's
but
so
I, unlike you, am not a criminal mastermind who can pull down links
everywhere.
I don't everywhere.
Know what you're talking about,
yeah.
Bobcat.
Yeah.
Bobcat.
Go ahead.
So I was walking Lola this morning, and a bird poop landed about 3 inches away from me.
Okay.
Knock on wood, but I've never had it land on me before, and that's 30 years, 9 streak almost came to an end today. Mm-hmm. Have you ever had bird poop land on you, and do you believe that is actually good luck?
No, I don't believe it's good luck. I've had it land on me, but I was wearing a hat. I was playing golf, and I was wearing a hat, and the bird poop hit the hat, so I just had to wash the hat. So it wasn't, traumatic or anything. But no, I don't think it's good luck to get pooped on by a bird. Andy, how about you?
I have had bird poop land on me, and no, I don't consider it good luck. I've not experienced nearly enough good fortune since that bird pooped on me to feel like something came of it.
But you're here all the time now. Isn't that kind of good luck?
I mean, I guess my good luck is someone else's misfortune.
Jorge, have you ever been pooped on?
I have, and it's not good luck. You just have a poopy day. Let's just put it
there.
That
you
way.
Go. Exactamente.
Why do people say that it's good luck then?
Because they're
understand.
Dopes.
No, because they want to convince themselves that there's an upside to having a bird crap on you. You're telling yourself what you want to hear. That's what it is.
I get it, but weird.
Bobcat.
All right, what you got, Jorge?
Okay, so I was on Twitter this morning, and I came across this note. It says, I hit your car, but I'm pretending to write my info because people are watching me. Hope you can fix it. Good luck. Have you ever hit a car without the driver being around or left a note? Have you ever done something like that?
I have hit a car, and I've done it twice, and I left notes both times, and both times the person that I hit screwed me. Said, like, this just happened fairly recently, actually. Said, it's going to cost $3,000 to repair my car, and this was a dent the size of a quarter. And I went, well, if you're going to go that way, we're going to have to get insurance companies involved. And then she called me back, and she said, well, I would settle for half that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to make a decision.
Right.
But I always leave a note because I have a guilty conscience.
I have never hit a car that did enough damage where it felt like a note was
Wait
necessary.
A minute. Did enough damage? What damage
like
did you do?
I've
hit and run?
No, I've like backed up accidentally, like
right.
hit a bumper. But
right.
I've gotten out, looked at it. There's been no damage, no mark, anything like that. I'm not going to leave a note over that because then all of a sudden—
Then you'll get screwed like
right,
me.
There's going to be other things. What I wonder, though, about Jorge, this guy who pretended to be leaving a note and his information in case somebody saw him, if somebody saw him and actually wrote down his license plate—
He's in trouble.
He could actually be in real trouble.
Yep.
Yeah, so I'm a terrible person, and I have absolutely hit cars and gone and ran away as fast as humanly possible.
Like, okay, so—
I got
the guy
most
with
of the
your
damage.
Cable
has
hookup,
that ever,
Greg, does
has
that?
That ever, Greg, has that
so
ever
hard
come
to
back to haunt you? In other words, has anyone ever seen you and turned you in? And
No one ever has, but I had one time where I was in a rush to something, and I just like scraped up against another car, and my car got blasted. Like the side mirror was coming off. There was huge dents and scratches all over it.
You look like Charles Jefferson's car in Fast Times at
yes,
Ridgemont.
Yes, exactly yeah. like that. And but his car was fine as far as I could tell, but mine was just a mess, and I never really got it fixed. So I just had to deal with it for a while. I'm a bad person, guys.
Yeah, you are. That's dishonest.
It was. It was a long time ago, kind of.
I hope. Hope it wasn't last week.
No. It was actually years ago. So Roger Federer has announced his retirement. He won 20 Grand Slam singles titles, won 2 gold medals, was number one for 310 weeks, and had 103 singles titles overall. With both he and Serena retiring at basically the exact same time, tennis is losing 2 monster stars. How do you think this will affect tennis viewership?
I don't know, this new kid coming up, this kid from Spain, is unbelievable. I thought this U.S. Open with Tiafoe and that kid, and I think there's a lot of good young tennis players. And let's face it, for years, Andy, it's been Federer, Nadal, Djokovic. They needed kind of a changing of the guard. Roger Federer will go down as maybe the greatest men's singles player of all time, but he's 41, and it's time for him to retire.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, to Greg's question, I think it could take some time before maybe this new blood captures the imagination of viewers, gets them to start really tuning in regularly because they want to see this young man, young woman, whatever. But it will take a minute before it doesn't feel like, oh, wow, Serena's not a part of this. Federer's not a part of this. Like, that's going to take a minute.
This, did you guys watch this Carlos Alcaraz who ended up winning the U.S. Open?
I did not.
Okay. He's 19, and he just swings out of his shoes. He swings harder than anyone I've ever seen. And if you hit the ball as hard as humanly possible at him, he just returns it. He's a human ball return machine. I think this was his first major. I think he's got a chance to win 20. I think he's that good if he doesn't get hurt.
Well, he just needs to win those 20.
He's just really, really, he's the guy that finally took out Tiafoe in five sets because every one of his matches for five sets. But I kept saying to myself, he's 19. If he, you know, and Roger's 41. So if this guy plays 20 years, he's going to win a major at least once a year.
He's that good. You know what's, I don't know tennis inside and out and like exactly the scene, but I wonder too, like, we haven't had a star emerge like really in the streaming age. And like during this time where there's just so much more to watch and there's so many other things out there, like I wonder what a challenge it is just to rise up and get people's attention at this time where our attention is just diluted.
Yeah, when you get a chance, watch this Carlos Alcaraz. He's unbelievable. Like, really, really good. Might be the best player I've ever seen.
Bobcat.
All right, so Pete Davidson has dated some of the most beautiful women in the world, as John Ireland knows.
Yep.
And seemingly can just pick who he wants at this point.
Yep.
Howard Stern weighed in and said that he should date Emily Ratajkowski since she was now just divorced. I don't really know how you can go up at this point with all the people that he has dated, but who would you think he would be next for Pete?
Ooh.
It's a good question. It's too bad the Kim Kardashian thing didn't work out. By the way, Bergman, that's who you should go out with.
Is Kim Kardashian? Kardashian?
She's worth like $1 billion.
Yeah, that'd be amazing.
That's the heiress.
That is the heiress.
But all right. So if I could go out with anybody, and I was Pete Davidson, who would I date?
Already dated Kate Beckinsale.
He did. He already dated Kate Beckinsale. He already dated
Ariana Cindy Grande.
Yes, Cindy Crawford's daughter. It'll be interesting to see who he ends up with. Yeah, he has the ability to kind of go supernova with these.
Margot Robbie's married, right?
Yep. So is Scarlett Johansson.
So is Mila Kunis.
Okay, here's a power couple suggestion. I may be mispronouncing her name. Anna, like Diarmas.
Anna Diarmas. That's a great suggestion.
She's in that new Marilyn Monroe movie.
She plays Marilyn Monroe. It's called Blonde.
Right.
She got a 15-minute standing ovation at the Venice Film
Festival.
She was
in Knives Out. She's a really young rising star.
Yeah,
she's very
pretty.
She dated
Ben Affleck for a year. Yeah, that's a good suggestion. That might be the one.
Bobcat.
All right, I got another one. Yep, I have to change back to the page. All right, there's a story in GQ today about how ridiculously rich people that happen to be short who are breaking both of their femurs, having titanium nails inserted down the center of the bone, and having their legs lengthened by anywhere from 3 to 6 inches. The nails are extended 1 millimeter every day for about 90 days via magnetic remote control, and it is apparently agonizing. Is there anything that you would do that was agonizing for 3 months to change something about your looks?
Well, that I wouldn't do. I mean, I wish I was taller, but I wouldn't be willing to go through that. That just seems stupid.
Maybe DTR could do that for his hands.
That's a great one. DTR, if you're listening, go to GQ and read this article.
I mean,
it's
I'm
in
sure
Vegas.
He could do it in the off season before he comes back to UCLA next year. I'm sure.
Is there anything
there 5 years ago?
I would put up with 3 months of discomfort for, in order to change my appearance. I don't think so. I'm not that in love with my appearance.
I mean, maybe it could like make you like shorter, you know, like if you want, you're like, I'm too tall or I need more hair or whatever it happens to be.
Right.
Who wants to be shorter?
Yeah, I mean, Andy, I think you would agree we would like more hair, but yeah. I'm not going to put up with 3 months of crap for it.
No, I mean, at this point, I've just settled into what it is.
Yeah, I think I have too.
Yeah, it doesn't bother me.
As you get older, you kind of accept what you get.
That's the thing. Like, I think like John and I were at this point too old to go through the rigmarole to change. Like, Greg, you're basically like the borderline, I think.
Yeah.
How old are you, Bergman?
39. I'll be 40.
Oh, you got to do this before you hit 40, man.
You're already tall enough. How tall are you?
I'm like 5'10", 5'11".
Oh, do the 3 months, man.
No, the 3 months? I could be 6'2".
You want to get your hair?
Go 6'4".
6'4"? Six, 6'4"
yeah.
is a good...
That's how you get a Kardashian.
Oh, see? How tall is Pete Davidson? Do we know?
He's tall.
He's got other things going on.
Yeah, but... Yeah, he's got BDE, is what everybody says. Bergman, you at 6'4", that would enhance your opportunity.
It's painful, but how bad do you want it, Bergman?
You know? Greg, you just got to do what you got to do.
Just stick to our plan. Don't date anyone who doesn't have at least $500,000 in the bank, and then you'll be good.
All right, I love
that. Heiress. If she's not, I'm sorry. Have you met my friend Jorge? I mean, come on.
Hey, Jorge's married.
Yeah. But I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do the lengthening. That you're lengthening or any other kind.
Bobcat.
All right, if you want a dumb kick it off the planet, let's do it. What did I have here? Jordan or LeBron?
Wow.
They both
because
did Space
I know there are...
They did both do Space Jam.
Because Jordan's the greatest player of all time. I can't imagine kicking Jordan off the planet, but because I know there are people listening in El Segundo, I say, of course I choose LeBron. Andy, how about you?
I'm choosing LeBron. This is easy. I think in a lot of ways, Michael Jordan, as great as he was, he ruined sports. Particularly in basketball, because every single conversation after that is all just through the prism of this guy's not Michael Jordan.
Right.
He went through with Kobe, went through with T-Mac, Allen Iverson, LeBron. Like, in a lot of ways, Jordan, as great as he was to watch, made sports conversations more boring and dumb. And I think LeBron is more interesting than MJ. So I'm keeping LeBron.
Bergman, who are you keeping?
I am keeping Jordan because he is the greatest, and the original Space Jam, like Jorge said, is the best.
No, LeBron's remake is better. I'm keeping
Jordan because when have you ever heard somebody say, "Oh, I'm gonna get the new LeBrons"? You feel me? Like the shoes.
Yeah, Jordan does have a shoe empire. Yeah. That is for sure.
Think about Jordan. Actually the butterfly effect from no Michael Jordan. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Kobe's not the same.
Yeah. But maybe Kobe is like truly at that point the guy that everybody talks about with Jordan, or maybe everybody just thinks of Kareem as the GOAT as opposed to Jordan ever having been there.
Sure, the Bulls are still a terrible franchise.
By the way, I get probably 2 to 3 videos a day from Michael Thompson at the Showtime Lakers reunion in Hawaii. And they're all great. Those guys are having an absolute ball.
Magic just tweeted out a photo from his official feed of them and the wives and the girlfriends and all that. It's awesome.
Yeah. And
no Michael Thompson.
Yeah, of course not. You know, Michael missed the team picture because he probably wouldn't leave his hotel room. But he's in a bunch of the other stuff. All right. Coming up next, we'll get into the Dodgers just when you thought. Just when you thought we had our bullpen all worked out. Not so fast. We'll explain next. Mason in Ireland, Andy in for Mace, ESPN LA.